Well, hello there. Welcome along to the RTÉ Soccer Podcast, episode 4 of 2021. James O'Toole is with us as ever. And James, I get a feeling that you cannot wait for 5 o'clock on Monday when, ping, an email lands in your inbox and it says, fixtures 2021. Can you wait for the fixtures to be revealed?
I can't wait for the stage through date, and it'd be great to see how we plan to go ahead here, see what happens, because as you know, by the time we actually, it's like March 19th is the date for kickoff, which will be a month and a bit later than it was last season. So as soon as we can get back to football and we see those fixtures, the better.
And of course, we always hope that it's going to be a blockbuster tie on the opening night. There usually is. It could be Shamrock Rovers against Dundalk. It could be Bowes against Shamrock Rovers. It could be a Louth derby, Dundalk against Drogheda United. We have to wait and see. But usually there's a few juicy ties on the opening night.
Yeah, but as you know yourself, Adrian, it's all done by this very special computer that this happens. But yes, sometimes we do get good ties on the opening night. I think opening night should be derby nights, to tell you the truth. I think no matter what happens, I think that's the way they should always be. Some big, big derby nights, if possible, should be on opening night to get us off to a good kick into the season.
Yeah, Johnny McDonald is also with us. Johnny, are you looking forward to the fixtures being released? I'm sure for managers and players, they can't wait to see what's about to unfold.
Look, we can't wait to get going again, Adrian. I have to be honest there. I think Rovers and Bowes kicked her off last year, wasn't it? That was the main fixture.
Yeah.
But look, you know, as you said, the likes of Drogheda coming in, Longford coming in, will they want an easy start, you know, or will they want to play one of the big teams? But it's going to be difficult, for the new teams coming in. But yeah, hopefully we get off to a good start and a few goals and good games.
And in your days, when you were managing, Johnny, and I'm sure you'll be back again, but when you looked at the fixture list, was it important for you to get a relatively easy start? You don't want a really tough start on the opening night because you want to build a bit of confidence and momentum early on.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because, you know, you do your pre-season, you get your pre-season prepared, and sometimes you go through a pre-season where you play a few matches, you win all your matches, but what counts is getting points on the board early. And depending on where you're coming from, Adrian, like if you're the likes of Shamrock Rovers or Dundalk, you're expected to win games, or Bowes, who finished in the top three last year. But if you're down to Bournemouth, Drogheda, Longford, Finn Harps, you know, it's important for that to get a point on the board early doors, and you start picking up points early in the season. It builds a bit of confidence and it builds momentum. So depending on where you are in regards of you know, the where you should be in the league financially and hopefully where you might want to finish up in the league.
Yeah, I guess all managers really want a home tie on the opening night, and as James mentioned, that big computer, whatever way it generates the fixtures, but a home tie would be absolutely ideal. We're joined on the podcast this week by Ollie Cahill from PFA Ireland. Ollie, just going back to your playing days, were you always very excited when the fixtures... We have very little to talk about these days, I'll be honest, Ollie. So the fixtures, we're making a big song and dance about the fixtures being announced. But were you always excited by the prospect of the fixtures when they were being released?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, everyone is buzzing when you're coming around. It kind of coincides, you know, the release of the fixtures this year with the start of pre-season. So lads will be, you know, getting out training and the fixture list coming out as well. So it does whet the appetite. Look, all the players want to do is get out and play matches, and the sooner that happens, the better for them. But yeah, and then you're always looking, you know, as the lads are speaking about, maybe the big derby games or the big games or title challengers, or, you know, or if you're down at the bottom or supposedly one of those teams that might be down around the bottom, you're looking at those fixtures and eyeing up and seeing how we could take points there, and, you know, mapping out your season. But yeah, look, it's always exciting when the fixtures come out. And I think that's for everyone, fans, players, managers, the whole lot.
Yeah, absolutely. We're always very conscious on the podcast because week in, week out, you know, we talk about football. But of course, there is a bigger picture, and that's COVID-19 and the effects it has had on this country since really March of last year. And the country is going through a particularly tough time at the moment. So that being said, and we're very conscious that it is football, it is sport, and there are more important things in life. But as it stands, and certainly last week I was wondering really about the March 19th date being feasible, but it seems to be all the indications are that it's on course, Ollie, is for a March 19th start. And that, I take it, is your understanding from talking to players and talking to officials involved in the game.
Yeah, yeah, at the moment, yeah, it's still going ahead for the 19th of March. Obviously, look, with things the way they are, and we've seen it last year, the best laid plans, you know, can go astray with COVID and everything that goes with us. But for the moment, it is the 19th of March, still, you know, 6-7 weeks away. Hopefully, the numbers will still be going the right way and be coming down and be reduced. And come that time, look, we will be in a position to kick the league off in games and get the go ahead. But look, it is, as you say, it is always in the lap of the gods, as such, as in, you know, if things get worse or things take a turn the other way, that, you know, it could be knocked on the head at any point. And I think everyone is aware of that. But they're just trying to put, you know, things in place maybe that might, you know, alleviate things. And look, I'm sure like everyone is going to learn lessons from last year as well. But look, as I say, a certain part of it might be just reacting to how things turn out in 2 or 3 weeks' time. But as I say, as it stands now, it's still, hopefully, fingers crossed, March 19th is the start date.
Yeah, with the First Division due to start a week later. And we're looking at a 36-game season as well. That seems, all the indications are that, certainly in terms of the fixture list being released on Monday, that it'll be over the course of 36 games. Is that your understanding as well, Ollie?
Yeah, that's what it looks like. Again, like they might kick off the season and it's 36-game season, but like as I was just saying, you might have to react during the season if something happens, or, you know, as I say, if things go the other way and play has to be stopped or whatever, then obviously everything will be back on the table and will have to be reconsidered. But yeah, look, as I say, at the moment, it's looking like the 36-game season, which, look, that's what everyone wants, players, managers, all that, like to have a fair crack at it and get a full season in. And look, please God, that's what will happen.
Yeah. We mentioned before, of course, that since last March of 2020, it's been very difficult. How was it for your members dealing, first of all, with the pandemic? And obviously, for so many players that were laid off, I imagine you were very, very busy trying to deal with situations right throughout the year, were you?
Yeah, it was a very, very difficult year. Yeah, very difficult for the players, as you said, a lot of uncertainty for them. And look, as I mentioned earlier as well, you're saying it's not just sport, like it was in every business, in every part of life, and not just in Ireland, pretty much worldwide. But yeah, it was, guys were getting laid off, I didn't know, was the season going to restart, were they going to get back paid, what was going to happen, what, you know, contractually, where did they stand? Obviously, look, it's a difficult time for clubs and everything, but say we were just dealing with the players, but we just try to stay in contact with them as much as we could. Obviously, we have delegates at each club, and just trying to, as we were getting information and speaking to, you know, the FAI and various clubs and stuff as well, to relay it back to the players. Because a lot of the time, the players are nearly the last ones to hear things. You know, decisions are made board level or whatever, you know, within the FAI and stuff, and then it filters down to the players. So, like, we just try to make sure that we get as much information to them as possible, and do what we can, you know, in consultation with all the clubs, and make arrangements to make sure that, you know, the contracts were honoured as best they could, and, you know, that there was some bit of certainty for the players. But it was difficult. It was difficult. It's hard to, you know, be certain on certain things, is here when you're just reacting to how, you know, this COVID was sweeping through the country. So it was a very difficult period for them. But look, they managed to get through it. And look, I think great credit has to go to probably all the stakeholders, really, you know, FAI, clubs, everything, all the protocols that were put in place and everything to actually get even 18 games of the season played and, you know, get the season finished the way they did.
And were all contract issues sorted?
Yeah, they were. They were in the end. Yeah, we negotiated with the clubs where it needed to be. And pretty much everyone was sorted in the end. So, which was great to see. As I say, look, it was difficult for everyone. We understand the difficulties that the clubs faced and paying the wages, and difficult for players to be in that situation, not knowing if they were going to get paid. But yeah, look, we sat down with everyone that needed, we got there in the end. It was a difficult process, but we got there. And look, lessons learned from last year as well, and hopefully, look, we can get through this season as well, and you know, ensure that the players' contracts are honoured, and, you know, that the clubs hopefully can stand over what they're offering now at this moment.
Yeah, and of course you had to factor in the welfare of players as well. It was a tough, like for everybody in society, it's been very, very tough, but very tough as well for football players who are so used to going in training and then, like everybody else, having to operate from home and not travel outside the, you know, the guidelines, be it 5K or 2K, whatever it might have been. But so were many players affected psychologically having to cope with the COVID crisis and everything that it entails?
Yeah, we did it. We helped out a few players around that situation. Some players, just found it really difficult to cope with it. They're used to, you know, the interaction, being in around the guys, being in that dressing room environment, which, you know, for anyone that's been in that in the professional world, it is a unique environment. And when that's taken away from you, it is difficult. And you know, I think there's only so much you can do through Zoom and the classes probably, and keeping in touch that way. Like, lots of guys needed that physical interaction with their teammates, and when that was taken away from them, it was really difficult for them. And say, look, we did help out some guys to get through it. And then look, there was other guys that probably during that period started thinking maybe about life outside of football and thinking, oh, look, this is the reality, or this, you know, I don't have an edge, or I have some bit of an education, and maybe try to, you know, do some courses and think about life outside of football when they had this downtime as well. So I'm sure some guys got some positive stuff out of it and maybe, you know, thought about a life outside of football as well. But yeah, some did struggle, really, really did struggle. And look, we were there for them and tried to help them through it. And look, hopefully, they say they won't have to go through it again this year, but look, who knows, but look, it's just important from our end to say, look, we're here for them, anything they need, or we have services in place that can help them, you know, if they're struggling mentally to get through anything, that we'll be there to help them, and hopefully they'll come out the other side of it.
The big thing as well, of course, Ali, is that literally nearly all of them have a year teaching degree behind them now since last March anyway, but the stat you put out the other day about are they happy to return to training or play with the same protocols as last season, I'm amazed at the amount who said yes to that. Were you a bit shocked by it yourselves?
It was 85%. Yeah, we're happy to go back. Some of them did comment as in they would prefer to have some kind of testing in place or even baseline testing. But in general, and that's probably, look, they're all going on their experience from last season and how clubs had handled it, protocols that were in place. And they obviously felt safe in the environment they were in. I think, look, actually, the playing football and that contact out on the training pitch, you know, I think the research has proved that it's not any more dangerous than, you know, going into the shop or whatever, you know, like how you can contract it. But I think it's everything else around that, you know, if you're in the dressing room. I think most clubs probably didn't even use dressing rooms for training. It was into the car park, out of your car, onto the training pitch, back in, there's no showers. I think the few games that possibly were called off last year due to COVID, I think most were centred around maybe teams travelling and that being on the bus together. And that was, you know, that was how the, you know, the contact tracing and the close contacts and that, you know, how that affected the knock-on effect to games. But yeah, I say it just goes to show how obviously the players do feel safe in that environment and they're trusting the clubs. And I say the clubs did a really good job last year in putting everything in place. So look, we'd been in regular contact with the delegates throughout the season, you know, when they weren't playing, when they went back to playing, just to make sure they were happy with everything, and any feedback we got from them we would have, you know, brought to the FAO and the clubs, just to make them aware of how the players felt. So it's obviously a doff of the cap to the clubs and how they handled it and the FAO and the protocols that were in place and everyone there. So but look, again, it's that could possibly change, you know, when they're back training now and they see the way things are, and if they're still happy with it, say that survey was done, you know, last week. I think most clubs should be back by next week. Again, look, we'll be speaking to the delegates again to see where we are and see if they're happy with everything that's in place going forward, and you know, take it from there.
Ollie, Johnny here. Johnny Mack, how you getting on?
Johnny, how are things?
Not too bad. Ollie, just, you know, listen to you there about the players and their welfare and all that. You know, I think obviously with the madness of last year and the newness of the epidemic, and, you know, for the clubs and the players themselves, you know, it should stand to everyone, shouldn't it, that we've kind of had a go at this last year, and it should help everyone along the way, you know, even down to the players. Like, you know, when you played, if someone came in with a cold into the dressing room, you isolated them in the past. So we're well used to that type of bubble and stuff. But I'm just saying that the with the pandemic last year, it should help everyone along the way, and it should make things, I don't mean easier, but it should run a little bit more smooth. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. Like I said, like the players took the survey on the back of their experience from last year. I think we surveyed them when things were shut down last year, and I think the majority of them wanted testing before they went back. And, you know, I think everyone was still learning about things, and it was like they didn't really know or really understand this at the time. But like, as you say, they've come through the season. You know, they've been split up into their pods, and just the way clubs handle that. So obviously, you know, that will be the same going forward again, and maybe even stricter. And once clubs are managing that the way they have done, and it keeps going, is it the players just judging on that survey alone seem to be happy with that. And as you say, yeah, it, absolutely. Like, I think everyone learned from last year going through it of how to do things. Certain things might have cropped up along the way and go, oh, we should be able to do that to alleviate that maybe going forward.
Will the players be tested? Like, I was watching the sport today, and Paul Lambert was talking about Ipswich and the teams in League One and stuff, and how Leicester tested compared to the Premier League. I know this is their Premier League, it's their elite league, and you know, how much will the players be tested? Do you know, or is that down to each club and the finances?
It's obviously all down to finances. I don't think there will be any tests at the moment. I think last year the teams in Europe were the ones that were tested originally going back, and they got tested pretty regular and went back into it. But outside of that, I don't think every other club there wasn't regular testing through it. But as I say, I think that the players obviously would ultimately like to have testing and prefer that extra layer of comfort. But I say, just from when we surveyed them, are they happy to go back training and playing with the current protocols the way they are without testing? Because the majority of them wouldn't have gone through testing last year with their clubs. And I say, yeah, they are happy to go back and train and play without the testing. Now, I think I'm aware that there's a couple of clubs that will be testing anyway. And look, that's an extra layer of comfort for the players, but it won't be across the board, the testing, definitely not.
Yeah, certainly a very high figure, 85%. And just to reiterate, the question was, are you happy to return to training, play with the same protocols as last season with no testing? So 85% said yes to the answers. It's a very high figure, very high figure.
Yeah, it is high. I wasn't maybe expecting it to be that high myself. But to say again, look, we were in contact with delegates at every club throughout everything last year. At no point did we get the feeling that they didn't feel safe, or they wanted the testing, or they weren't pushing for testing. So, and you know, that's why we surveyed them again this year. If the players felt they wanted testing or they needed testing to go in, obviously we would be bringing that forward to whoever and it needs to be, the FAI, the clubs or whatever, and saying, look, the players really aren't willing to go back without some sort of form of testing in place. But again, look, they're the ones on the ground, they're the ones that are going in and out to training every day, they're the ones that are playing matches and going through it and experiencing it on the ground day in, day out, and say they obviously feel safe enough and are happy enough with the environment they're in. Now again, it's 85%, you break that down, when every team, two or three guys won't be happy with it, but like I said, the vast majority seem to be, according to that, are happy and they're willing to go back and play it with the current protocols.
Do you visualise any supporters being back in at all this season?
I don't know. I'm only guessing. I suppose with the season being pushed out again, you know, the start date now being middle of the March and the end of the season being pushed out towards the end of November, and you'd like to think, wouldn't it, that maybe some kind of supporters would be able to get back in. Maybe, you know, if you're looking at it full rounds of fixtures, maybe for the last years of fixtures, it'd be nice, wouldn't it, to be able to get some kind
of... I'm just thinking of the finances of the club, and, you know, as we talk about at the top of the show about, you know, the derbies that can generate big crowds and stuff like that, and just for the help of the clubs financially as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, obviously they're still waiting on certain financial commitments from government and FAI or whatever, but they've, you know, they'll be budgeting for, you know, probably, I'm sure it's baseline, no fans for the whole season. So if they do get fans in at some point, that'd be a massive bonus for them. And as I was saying, the end of the season is pushed out another few weeks because of this. So, like, I'm sure doing that as well in the back of their minds, they might be hopeful that, look, we might be able to get some kind of fans, some percentage of fans in through the gates by the time the season finishes up, come end of November. All going well, please God.
And Ollie, you mentioned their funding, of course, for all the clubs and for players is going to be crucial. You know, they estimate something like 6 to 9 million is required for the season. So the FAI obviously have to wait on word back from government. It's a significant sum of money that's required. And every sport, of course, will be looking for funding to get their particular sport up and running. But you just have to hope, I guess, that the FAI get the required funding to get the season up and running.
Yeah. Hopefully, as you say, look, everyone will be going to government, looking for their slice of the cake or whatever. And look, the FAI are in there and doing their negotiations. Hopefully, look, they can get what they're looking for. It's just hopeful. I say we're not at the table or around those negotiations, so we don't really know what stage they're at. But look, I'm sure the FAI will be in contact. Constant contact with the clubs around budgets and where they're at, you know, and from our end, if clubs are offering contracts to players, that, you know, hopefully they'll be able to stand over them and go, yeah, look, we've budgeted for X amount, we know that's coming in, so we'd be able to pay X amounts to whatever and to the player, and it's in their contract, and they're able to hopefully stand over it. So, you know, but look, as I say, let's see how that pans out during the season.
And as well as that, Ollie, one significant change from last year. And PFA Ireland as a group, are you happy with the development whereby we had a number of postponements last year? We had cases and issues around, say, the likes of Derry City, Shamrock Rovers had their cases as well, St. Pat's. So there were a number of matches postponed, but in 2021, all going well in terms of the start of the season. Matches won't be postponed for COVID-related reasons once the club has 14 registered players available. Are you and PFA Ireland as a body happy enough with that stance?
Look, again, I suppose it was put out towards the end of last season. Well, there won't be any more cancellations for COVID-related games, and or if it was a COVID situation, games were cancelled as well. And I think, look, it's still, you know, it might be still at the discretion of the league or whatever to look at it and you know, make decisions around. I don't think it's as black and white as it's not going to be called off if it's COVID related and stuff. So we just got to wait and see how that pans out as well. I think, look, the main thing from Ireland, we just want to get a season finished, a complete season if we can, without too many disruptions. Look, I know it is going to be difficult. There's no getting away from it, but look, as I say, the main thing is that, you know, that we can try and get the games played, get the fixtures played. I say you don't want the teams to be kind of feeling weakened teams as such. But look, if needs be to get to the end point, yeah, it's a tricky one. It is a difficult one. Again, look, we speak to some players and go, yeah, look, let's just get the games on and play, and other players, you know, and maybe look, as the season goes on, it'll depend on what situation certain teams and players are in, and they might change their opinion of them. But look, again, it's a kind of wait and see how that pans out.
Yeah, and a lot of clubs, as we mentioned, starting into training this coming week. I guess from your point of view as well, Ollie, a lot of players at the moment in limbo, out of contract, waiting to perhaps tie down deals. So it's a busy time, but it's an anxious time as well for players.
Yeah. I mean, it's anxious in the League of Ireland at the best of times, with the, you know, the majority of players on 1 year contracts, and, you know, not knowing from year to year where they're at. And I think we've probably seen, you know, over the last few weeks, maybe things slow down as in regards to players signing, because maybe, you know, clubs are still waiting on financially where they're going to be at ultimately, you know, for the whole season. And if they can get that extra, you know, finances in from the FAI and government or whatever. So, you know, if their initial budget is probably, you know, gone, and then, you know, they'll wait to see where they're going to be, you know, in the next few weeks. So, yeah, there's a few players still holding on and hanging out, waiting to see if, you know, if something will show up. And I suppose the clubs then, once they're back pre-season training, then might see, you know, gaps in the squad and go, oh, we need to fill gaps here and there. So, you know, it is a difficult time, absolutely, for players. And it is normally at the best of time for them. And, you know, we normally run the training camp. We weren't able to do any field sessions this year, but we did some online stuff, you know, to try and keep lads tipping away. And, you know, as I say, mentally just keep them tuned in and, you know, hoping to have them ready, physically ready in some shape or form if they did get the shout, you know, get in training or get in somewhere. But yeah, look, it is difficult, and you know, we have players onto us still, you know, going, oh, any clubs training or anyone looking for whatever it may be, a striker or defender or whatever, can I get in and train with a club and just to, you know, see if they, you know, if they can get something out of it. So yeah, difficult, but you know, hopefully we can get the majority of them fixed up, and you know, hopefully they're not losing heart. Yes, as I say, there's still, you know, if finance become available, clubs will still move, I'd say, before the season kicks off.
Yeah, Johnny, it is a worrying time for players. If you're not, you know, if you're not contracted to a club or you haven't signed for a club, just waiting for the phone call, and particularly for players who depend on the League of Ireland as their main source of income.
Well, it has been, you know, over the last few years. You know, if a fella can get a 2 or 3 year contract, but at least that gives him a little bit of stability. But, you know, if you're in any job, if you forget about football, like in any job, if you're just contracted year by year, it's nearly a zero contract, if that's the right way of putting it, you know. And then hopefully the clubs can fulfil the contracts, as Ollie says. So it's a difficult time for players, and most of them, I don't know what the percentage is, Ollie, are on yearly contracts. You'll have the better players and the clubs with the finances, you know, tying fellas down for 2 or 3 years, which means they don't have to go the following year and sign 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 players that are just adding on and releasing lads out as well. So, yeah, it is a difficult time. And, you know, Ollie spoke about lads doing stuff outside of football and getting education. And, look, I've always said it, that if lads can get their education through the college system here, And some of the clubs are linked up with the college systems, and fellas can come through and come out with degrees. You've got the lads that come through UCDs down through the years, Robbie Benson being the latest one, you know, done all his degrees, and then he's played at the highest level. And when you finish your football, you don't earn that amount of money to be able to retire at the end of playing in the National League or the Airtricity League. So you have to have something behind you, even if you've been successful all the way through for 10 or 12 or 15 years. And Ollie, I think you would agree with that.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. It's I say we have had a few lads that have come to us, and you know, they had a bit of downtime during the last season, and you know, thinking about things outside of football. And you know, it is difficult. And even just back to your point there, the 1 year contracts, I think it was up around 80% or more of guys were on 1 year deals. There was a few 2 and 3 year deals slowly seeping back into it, but you know, I say financial clubs don't know where they're at now, really, in the current climate. So it is difficult. And then, look, if they don't get employment within football, it's difficult to get a job outside of football as well, you know, with lots of industries being hit at the moment as well. So it is a difficult time. But yeah, absolutely, the guys just need to switch on and think about life outside of football. And look, we have a player development officer in Emma working with us. And in fairness, she's been busy the last while as well. And slowly, you know, it's nearly a mindset change to get guys thinking about outside that football bubble, that, you know, you need to be thinking about a dual career and thinking about things outside of football. In fairness, as you say, lots of lads have during their downtime and last season. And, you know, it's just hopefully that they'll continue that trend and think about it, life outside football. Football is a mass for everyone, as Johnny said there as well. You ain't going to be making money to be able to retire from playing football in this country. So it's important to think about other things and prepare yourself for life outside football.
Sure. It's going to be a busy time for you as well, Ollie. So listen, the best of luck with it all. Ollie Cahill from PFA Ireland joining us on the RT Soccer Podcast. Johnny, the Irish Under-21s, Jim Crawford's squad gearing up for a qualifying campaign, the European Championships in 2023. And it's Italy and Sweden once again. What did you make of the draw?
Oh, it's tough, isn't it? Like, you know, the Italians again. it's difficult for GM with the 21s, you know, especially with the way we are with the senior team now. And Jim brings somebody through, somebody sticks their head, steps up, and they're doing really well. And then Stephen takes them on, and it weakens Jim's under 21s. But look, if that's the progress of a player coming through the 21s to make the senior team, so it's a little bit difficult for Jim. But if you can get qualified, the trick is to get qualified and try and get through to the latter stages. It can be difficult, Sometimes it's only one team coming out of groups like that. It depends on many's in the group. But look, try and qualify and get into the latter stages of these European competitions.
And Johnny, we haven't had you on the podcast over the last wee while, so you're back. But there's been plenty of movement, of course. Alan Kelly replaced as goalkeeping coach by Dean Kiley. Damien Duff has departed the scene. What have you made of it all?
There's been a bit of movement. Throw Andy Reid in there as well, can't you? So Andy's gone from the 18. So there's a lot of movement going on in the FAO. Yeah, there definitely is. Dean Kiley coming in. Look, I just watched him there today with Crystal Palace. Yeah, goalkeeping coaches are vital now into the way teams are playing out from the back. It's not like years ago where the goalkeeping coach would be given two balls and sent up into the corner with the goalkeepers and kick a few balls at them. They're a vital part of the defence now and how they play out in the back and, use as the extra player to back their distribution. So they're as important as the outfield players now as well. Look, the Damien Duff situation, it's been a few weeks now, but Stephen has a little bit of time to get someone involved with him, but maybe he won't. Maybe he's happy with the crew he has, and so a lot of change in the FAO, a lot of uncertainty.
Okay, James, we gave you some homework to do. Track all the transfer news over the last while, and you've listen. I marvel at your attention to detail. You've been forensic.
Well, I've done my best, Adrian. Don't marvel yet.
Where do you want to begin?
Will we start at Bowes, maybe?
Right, yeah. You lead off.
Johnny probably knows a couple of these lads as well. Obviously, Bowes have a couple of players coming in from Waterford. They brought in Ali Coote and Tyreek Wilson from Waterford. They were able to secure, and I think this is a big, big signing for Bowes, Georgie Kelly. I don't know if Johnny thinks this is a big sign. I think this is a massive signing for Bowes. He didn't really work out when his loan spell at St. Pat's.
I think Georgie, I've seen Georgie a lot at UCD, and he got his move then up to Dundalk. Didn't happen for him in Dundalk. And it didn't really happen for him either, James, at St. Pat's. They thought he was going to be the main goal scorer. But with Roy going over back to Scotland, isn't he gone to Ayr? Mm. He's going to fill in the centre forward position there. Look, the club. You kind of always find a club that fits you and suits you. And maybe Bowes would be the club that fits Georgie. And, if he doesn't fit in at Bowes, he's gone through three top clubs in the league now where he hasn't fit in. So it's time for him to bed down, put his feet down, get his feet under the table and settle in and start scoring a few goals. And maybe that'll come with him playing consistently, consistent football and getting first-team football.
Also, yeah. Rory Feely there as well. A good didn't work out at Pats the first time. Went to Waterford, found his feet, and now at Bowes after coming back from Pats again. That should be good. And Stephen Mallon, I think, is a good signing for them as well. He might supply some of the stuff for Georgie.
Yeah, I mean, Rory is very adaptable. He can play anywhere across the back. He can play him as a holding midfielder. He can actually even play him up front. We had Rory with DCU with the teams over the years. He's a great lad. He's a low maintenance player, a top professional, and again, he feels it's the right move. Bowes seems to be the fit for him, and he fit in with that young group of players. Tyreek Wilson as well, James. Yeah, lad come back from Man City. He was at Waterford, so he'd be fitting into Bowes into the left side of the pitch somewhere.
Yeah, some good business by Bowes. I like Georgie Kelly. I'm a bit surprised it didn't work out for him at St. Pat's, but certainly at Dundalk, you'd argue that perhaps he didn't really quite get a look in because Hooban was banging in the goals. But anyway, James, after Bowes, where do you want to head to next?
Where do you want to go? We go up to Derry, will we? There's two big signings for Derry so far, actually, I think. The re-signing of Daniel Lafferty from Rovers. I think that's really, really good. Like they've re-signed a couple of players that were there last year, but Daniel Lafferty coming back to Derry is a good one. But the big one, the massive one, and he was missed this year, having gone back off his loan, is David Parkhouse. I think that's going to be a massive signing for Declan. And obviously, the big one today, God, not today, even the last number, it was Conor McCormick going out to Galway. Mm. And I believe it may be a small fee, but a fee was paid because Conor was still in contract. But I can't remember the last time a team played a fee in the League of Ireland for a player within the league. Can you, Johnny?
No, I can't recall a big fee. I remember years ago, I think Brian Kerr paid a few bob for Joe Lawless, but that was many, many years ago. But
it's probably a kit, was it?
Just back to Parkhouse. I think Parkhouse and Lafferty are good signings, James. I think they lacked the goal scoring last year. Parkhouse was on loan to Hartlepool over the last season, up to now. And again, a fella that done well, he really enjoyed his time at Derry, James. And I think they've been missing there's someone like him up top. Lafferty experience as well coming in. But I think they're going to be short on players, James. I think they're going to be a lot of young players around Declan's squad this year. And I think it could be a difficult year for them.
Yeah, I think you might be right there. I think that sums up Derry. I think that's the way it's going to be. I think they have to cut their cloth to what they can get.
Would you be fearful, James, about the season ahead? I mean, one would presume that it might
be fearful for them. I think they've enough there to finish mid-table. If anything above mid-table is a good outing. Like the back four, obviously, Ali Gilchrist has gone. Gerona Bruin has gone as well. Conor Clifford's gone from midfield as well.
Walter?
Walter's gone as well. Walter off to Sligo.
Peter Cherry, James. What about the goalkeeper, Peter Cherry?
Yeah, do you know what? Gareth's side, Nathan Gareth's side, I was speaking to the goalkeeping coach last year, Johnny, you know him well. Mm. And I was asking about Nathan, and Nathan didn't get enough time, I felt, to show what he was capable of. And he believed that he's a really, really top quality goalkeeper. So it'd be nice to see Nathan get a bit of time in nets this year and see what he's actually made of, because we haven't seen it so far.
Okay. You've taken us to Dalyman Park and also to the Ryan McBride Brandywell Stadium. Where are you off to next, James? What's your transfer news?
We may as well go to Dundalk. And there's a player here I think only Johnny's going to be able to pronounce. I think he's actually a Faroese international. Is he, Johnny? Oli Erik Mitskugin.
Yeah, he's a midfielder. I think it's a guy, if it's the right guy I'm thinking of, James. He's a central midfielder. And
he was with KI last year.
Klaksvík. He's with Klaksvík, yeah. But I think it's the guy, if it's the right guy I'm talking about, Eric Mitskogan, whatever. But he's with Klaksvík, and he's a decent player. What I've seen of him, he's a decent player. But they've also taken in the lad in Tórshavn, Sonny, the centre half from B36 as well. So, you know, they're bringing in players maybe from leagues that are below our league, James, if that's fair enough to say. They'd probably be players coming out of the league. So,
yeah, you would probably say that, but we've seen some of these teams in Europe, and as a team, they're probably not great, but some of their individuals, the likes of Sonny Nettstedt, would be quite a good individual, if you know what I mean. They just wasn't backed up with the team. So they may slot into a good team here. Like, the main thing for them was obviously getting a goalkeeper in. And Alessio Albibi coming in from, I think he's Albanian, but he was playing in Italy.
Yes.
So that's what they needed. They needed a goalkeeper in, which is the main thing.
Mm. It's a lot of change though, Johnny, isn't it, at Dundalk?
Yeah, a lot have gone out. Mountney, Gannon, Hoare, Massey gone to Drogheda. I mean, George Kelly, obviously he's gone a bit, but Gary Rogers retiring. Yeah, Flores gone back to England. So there's a lot of movement, you know, and a lot of players coming in. So might take a little bit of time for them to adapt. But I suppose this is the first full season for them. And might just take them a little time for them to adapt. But I still think they've enough around the dressing room to pull it together. They'll be still up there and thereabouts.
James, tip down from Dundalk to Drogheda.
Yeah, Drogheda, and I think Tim Clancy's done well here, because he had a quite young side last year and they won promotion, obviously won in the league. So this time is a case of, right, we need to consolidate. We need a bit of experience in the league. And therefore you get the likes of Dane Massey come in, you get Dinny Corcoran come in, you get Gary Deegan come in from Shells, and then you put in with that Colin McCabe, goalkeeper, in as well. And you get Dara Markey from Pats. And Danny O'Reilly as well from Shells. Mm. I think he was former Longford. You know, you get guys like that in the mix. It's a good mix of experience there coming in for Drogheda. I think the one that stands out for me, I love Gary Deegan, absolutely love him. And it's that type of player. He needs a midfield to make sure battles are won.
Dane Massey, you know, going in there, experience. Like, I know he's left forward, but he's good. He could play in centre-half as well. You know, he's the experience. You could put him in there. Deegan through the middle. Dinny Corcoran, proven scorer in the Premier League. You know, he mightn't play every single game for you, but, you know, I think they're looking to try and mix a bit of experience and with some of the younger players that they can bring through. But, yeah, they just don't want to do a shells throughout this season. They want to make sure they get off to a good start. And I think they'll be okay. I think they'll be all right.
Okay. What about the other new club, Longford Town, James?
Yeah, Longford, like we had Dara on last week, obviously, and they're already back to training and stuff like that. But the only ones we can really see from them was Paddy Kirk come in and Callum Thompson have come in. I think there may be one or two that I've probably missed out on, to tell you the truth, at Longford. But Dara had a good squad from last year, in fairness. Like, you've seen them last year against some of the teams they played against. Like, the game against UCD, the game against Galway, was really, really good. And the fitness levels were extraordinary last year. So he only needed to put a couple to them to see where he goes. I'm sure there'll be more movement there come towards the start of March. But that's the two I could find at the moment, Adrian.
Yeah.
Aaron Dobbs go in there, James. The Dobbs
Aaron
go in from Shelbourne.
Yes, Aaron went in during the week, yeah.
Yeah.
So Aaron's good.
He's got to be
tight. I think Aaron has been let down a bit, I think. I don't think, as you were saying, Johnny, I don't think he's found the right manager. I think he's a quality little player, like, do you know what I mean? Mm. And
He can score goals. It'd be difficult for them, James, with the budget, you know. Depends what way the club is structured and what's, you know, what finances they have. But look, again, a bit like Drogheda, if it was me bringing a team up from the first division, you'd be trying to consolidate and get off to a good start and get as many points on the board as possible early doors, because as Ollie said earlier, there could be a break in the season and it could end up, it might not be a 36, you know, game season. It could end up being 20 or 25. Hopefully it goes the full way, but you know, it's important for the likes of them to get off to a good start.
Yeah, the champions, James, Shamrock Rovers. We know Jack Byrne has departed for Cyprus. Tell us about the transfer movement there.
Yeah, well, they've basically signed Dundalk. That's where they've gone for. They've gone, in fairness to them, the two Seans they brought are solid players, like Sean Gannon and Sean Hoare. They brought in Chris McCann and obviously raided Bowes for Danny Mandrew. But over the last number of years, they've done this, and it's great to see it again. They've promoted two young lads from their under-8 setup, Darren Nugent and Killian Cahill, as well, to pro contracts. So that's good to see. I think Brad Zarnows, he doesn't need to add much to that. And the players he's added, especially in the likes of Gannon, Hoare and Mandrew, he's added quality players there.
Going to get your thoughts on Danny Mandrew, because obviously he was at Bohemians, but it's going to be a big year ahead for him, isn't it?
Yeah, well, he needs to get his head down and do the work. I don't think that... I forget about Stephen Bradley. I don't think, you know, the players of Shamrock Rovers or the new players, the likes of Hoare and Gannon, they drive teams. They drive the teams when we're in. You know, Danny, bit of a flair player, and we feel it was a big noise at Bowes. Got a lot of publicity. He's got a lot of great goals. But he just needs to knuckle down and do the basics, get the hard work done, and the rest follows that. I wouldn't say he's a shoo-in now for Shamrock Rovers. I'd say they had a little think about him. Why did he fall out at Bowes? Why did he let him off so easy? You know, so it'll be a big year for Danny. He's a good player. There's no doubt about it. Absolutely no doubt. He's got to take a few knocks. He's not going to be the main man there for whatsoever. And he's just got to row in and get stuck in. Chris McCann coming in, experienced player, mould him as well. But they let a few out. Greg Bulger, Lafferty, as James said, gone to Derry. You know, so there's a few of them gone out with the force name. Reach Marshall, good lad, good young player. Jack Bourne obviously gone. Brandon Kavanagh gone as well. So they've released a few. So that probably set them up with a few bob to sign these players. They released six or seven. So allowed them to go and get the top players from Dundalk.
James, regale us with tales of Sligo Rovers, please.
Oh, you're going to be over the moon this year, Adrian. You're going to be
all hail Walter.
You have a smile on your face as you're chatting.
We'll see.
You've got some good players come in, like Greg Bulger. We know what Greg's like. Greg's very, very reliable. Robbie McCourt played really well in defence last year for Waterford. Jordan Gibson as well. He was midfielder, really, really good. You've promoted a young man, Johnny Kenny, who anybody I've spoken to says is an absolute quality player. From the underage setup, but you have Walter. You put Walter and Junior together in a team, and I think you are bound to have great attacking and many, many goals.
Yeah, well, Junior isn't signed yet and may not be. We simply don't know. And obviously as well, Johnny, there's going to be a lot of activity in the market in the next 10 days or 2 weeks or 3 weeks or so.
I agree the players that Liam's for, and Walter is Liam's type of player, you know. They're the players. Liam knows the type of players. He's been building this for the last year or two, Liam. So, yeah, they've been good signings.
What about St. Patrick's Athletic, James?
St. Pat's, well, what can we say? More out than in at the moment. Anyway, they've secured the four players I've looked at mostly are really good players. John Mountney, we know what John Mountney can do. Great player for Dundalk in his time. Ronan Coughlin, you know yourself, he blew hot and cold for Sligo Rovers. He was cold at the start of the season. And then when we got back into the season, he blew very, very hot, which helped you get into the position you finished in. Sam Bone, really good at Waterford, got injured, had a long injury layoff, but really, really good. But one of my favourite players of last season, Matty Smith. I thought he was wonderful. Every time I watched him, I thought he was absolutely brilliant.
Mm. Yeah, what do you reckon, Johnny?
Yeah, I agree. Matty's a good player. He's a good player. Mountney's vast experience. You know, Coughlin, bit of pace up top, you know, what way they're going to use him. I think he'd be using him in behind rather than coming short. But again, a bit of experience. But a good few out, James, as you said. Rory Feely gone. And down it. Darren Markey gone to draw there. So, you know, they've a few out.
Luke McNally as well gone, yeah.
Luke McNally, yeah, which I'm taking, they got a couple of quid for. And then, obviously, their two goalkeepers went. So...
Mm. They were looking to get Baston Hardy in, weren't they? I think he's at Bowes.
They were, yeah.
I think they were close to getting him on board. So sometimes they can knock you back and... you know, you go looking for a fella and people know you're looking for him, and then you don't get him, and then your second choice comes in. It's, you know, sometimes it can knock a fella's confidence a little bit. But look, you know, it's big season for Pats. I think they should be pushing for Europe this year. I really do. But we might talk about that further down the line. But yeah, I think Matty Smith, you're right. Good player to get in.
Yeah, we mentioned Luke McNally there. We can hear from him in just a moment. Signed for League One Oxford United. We'll also hear from the Oxford manager, Carl Robinson. But first, Luke himself.
Delighted to be here. It's obviously a big move for me coming over from Ireland and stuff to a club like Oxford and stuff. So I'm now over the moon. Really happy. I think it's easier at 21 than it is for a lot of other Irish boys that could come over at like 18 and stuff. I think at 21 you're a bit more well-rounded and stuff, so a bit more of a man in that, so hopefully it goes okay. It's a big decision to make, but you can only go on your gut, and I was really happy with what Carl was saying to me. He's a big influence on it. He had an infectious personality, really, and you look for that to keep you in line, really. So great facilities here at Oxford, a team that's really flying, and I'm really excited to be here.
He's come through a different way. He's come through having to defend, playing men's football, amateur football, dropping into Drogheda and into St Pat's, and we fought off three SPL clubs and two clubs who are above us in our league now. I also have had to apologise to the Mail because I told them that he'd gone somewhere else because on that day we didn't want to go any higher with our bids, so it was all part of what we were trying to do. So it was a real, he's one for the future, as you could imagine.
That's Carl Robinson, the manager of Oxford United, speaking to the club's website. Before that, we heard, of course, from Luke McNally. The very best of luck to him on his move from St. Pat's to Oxford United. Let's go back to James's trawl of transfers. What about the Harps? Come on, the Harps. Finn Harps.
Harps are one of those teams where straight away people are going to say, oh, Ollie's going to struggle. I think the biggest thing for Harps is the loss of Sam Todd. who wanted to go off and finish a degree with UCD. So that'd be a big one. But they brought in Will Seymour and Conor Barry from Galway and Sligo, respectively. And they've also brought in Ryan Rainey from Bonagie United, midfielder. Now, from people I've spoke to up in the Northwest, he's meant to be a really, really good player. So it'll be interesting because Ollie's done this before. He's gone into the Donegal League and taken players out and put them in a Harps, and they've worked out really, really, really well. Tony McNamee being one of them, having left football completely, came back in and did a great job for him. I think he's going to have trouble this year. I think he has trouble every year. But so far, they seem to be three solid signings, but I think Sam Todd's going to be a big loss to them.
Yeah. What do you reckon, Johnny?
It'll be the same old for Ollie, you know. I think we'd be a bit more concerned than he'll be. He seems to do it every year. It's going to be difficult for them. It really is. But signing players from non-league, Ollie knows them. He has a good eye for the player. He knows what's required from him. He's used to taking them out of non-league and putting him into the division, and he usually gets it right, in fairness to him. It's hard work for him, and again, it'll be hard work this year. Will he stay up? I couldn't tell you. I have to be honest. I couldn't tell you with Trotter coming in Longford, all his experience. He won't panic. He knows what's required, and he usually just gets them over the line when required.
And James, certainly last but by no means least, Waterford, of course, so much changed there during the course of last year. And we have a new man in at the helm, Kevin Sheedy, but quiet enough in terms of players.
Yeah, the only one I've actually found, and maybe Johnny's homework was a bit better than me, was Matthew Connor coming in from Galway, the goalkeeper. Now, he's obviously signed back players from last year already, some players were in contracts. But as we said earlier on, losing Matty Smith, Ali Coote and Robbie McCourt as well are three losses for them. They do have time. I'm going to take it. They're going to go through all the contacts in the UK to see what they can get as well to put into the squad. But they need to look at how it's going and not to be caught out by this league is the major thing. And whoever's advising them needs to quickly get them some players in and see players with experience probably around the league, because they've missed out on a couple.
The good thing for Waterford is they've a good structure down there. The place is good, the pitch is good, the training facility is good. I agree that they're probably trying to get players in on loan from England, and because they obviously wouldn't know the league here. I do agree that they need to get going and they need to get a structure in place quickly. Otherwise, they could fall behind and it might be difficult for them to get players in. But I like the place down there. I like it. There's a good structure to it. The training facilities are really, really good. The Waterford supporters are great. When that team is doing well, the people come out and support them as well when they come back. But look, not much activity that we know about. But they've lost a few players, as I said, especially to look at Matty Smith to St. Pat's and Wilson to Bowes. But I don't know. I can't give you an honest assessment of what, because they don't have anything in. So, but it's a good club, and they'll probably try and get the players in from the UK.
Well, of course, this is very much a snapshot at the moment. Lots of a transfer activity, I'm sure, in the coming days. But I guess, James, we mentioned Conor McCormick moving to Galway United. That has to be the most eye-catching move in terms of first division signings so far, anyway.
Well, it's not just them. Like, if you look at Shell's picking up Brendan Clark, but the squads that they're putting together, like, you got Michael Barker gone to Shell's, Glenn McCauley's gone to Shell's. Shell's have done a lot of business in this period now. Both themselves and Galway seem to be really, really strongly putting sides together to get out of the first division first go. I think that's what they're trying to do, trying to get out straight away. Obviously, we spoke to Lisa last week about the setup at Galway and how they're going professional and now in full time. So I think the two big squads that they're going to build in Galway and Shelburne to see if they can get out of the and into the Prem straight off. It'd be interesting. First division, has to be said.
Interesting times ahead in the Premier Division and the First Division. Listen, we leave it there. I'm sure there'll be lots more signings to discuss in the coming weeks. And of course, March 19th, the start date in place at the moment as things stand for the Premier Division. As always, many thanks to James O'Toole and also to Johnny McDonald for joining us on the RT Soccer Podcast. From me, Adrian Eames. Bye for now.